I think in some cases there's a bit of a reluctance to earn money, and that's a curiosity that I perceive. It's like, why should public transit systems always be in a deficit? Why not create a situation where you facilitate the willingness to pay of consumers that obviously a lot of them have, because cars are not cheap, parking is not cheap, even a ride-hail vehicle is not cheap. Why would you be reluctant to just charge more than just the standard fare plus maybe a comfort charge and just say, okay, it's another type of commercial service, and this can all be like reviewed with AV, because we think customers will see it as a completely new opportunity. And that's partially what we have proven with Moya. Moya is run on a commercial model. Our rides are a lot more expensive than public transport, slightly cheaper than a taxi. They have detours, and it's fully accepted. Our fleet is more or less fully booked throughout the week. And this has proven this as just such an example. The wise use of dynamic pricing can have a great benefit for you to being able to sustain the services and provide services in the outskirts where otherwise you would not have the funding and financial capabilities.
Welcome to the Mobility Innovators Podcast.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Mobility Innovator Podcast. I'm your host, Jaspal Singh. Mobility Innovator Podcast invite key innovators in the transportation and logistics sector to share their experiences and future forecasts. In this episode, we'll be discussing the innovation in automobility space. Our today's guest is responsible for running electric ride-hailing service in Hamburg. He's the CEO of Moya. Prior to joining his current role, he was instrumental in shaping the company's all-electric ride-pooling services and autonomous driving strategy, first as a head of product starting in 2017, and then as a chief product officer from 2019 onward. Moya is running a fleet of 565 battery electric vehicles in Hamburg. Before joining Moya, he spent several years as a management consultant advising international firm on digital transformation of transport and logistics. I'm so happy to welcome Sasha Meyer, CEO of Moya. Now it's time to listen and learn. Hello, Sasha. I'm so happy to have you on the podcast. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you were quite busy with a lot of things happening at Moya. So thank you for taking time out.
Yes, thanks for having me. It's a really great opportunity to talk to you and educate on what we are doing day in and day out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And before starting to discuss about Moya and autonomous vehicle, I want to actually start a discussion with your professional career, because it's quite an interesting journey you have so far. I saw you started your career as a consultant and then move into a product development, which is like from consulting to actually getting your hand dirty and building thing. And now you're leading the company as an CEO. So I'm very curious to know, how's your professional journey shape up over the period of time? And any interesting fact about your career, which is not on LinkedIn or which is not people aware about?
Yeah, I think the most curious fact that is not on LinkedIn is that actually the first career that I followed was being a bass player. So I played electric bass and double bass. I then even applied for the music university here in Germany and had the chance to go for it. But overnight I decided, oh, maybe it's a better decision not to make your hobby into your profession and you start being dependent on it. So I did the right thing, and I studied economics with a focus on e-commerce and logistics. And I think that's kind of a nice coincidence, because if I would somehow have to say, what were you doing today at Moya, I would say, okay, on the one part it's e-commerce because it's all digital what we build, and on the other side it's logistics, because efficiency, operational excellence, that's all so important if we speak about transit systems, that you cannot just ignore this fact that it's a great combination. Afterwards, before I moved into consultancy, actually my first jobs have been in the area of product development in the mobile telecommunications industry. And so there I learned that I have a slight tendency for products that are on the one side hard to explain, on the other side I might be a little bit off the curve. So I worked in my first job on the introduction of fixed line MMS to send pictures to your grandma and they can receive it on their fixed line telephone. Turned out no one wants fixed line telephones anymore. So I moved on. As you said, I've been in consultancy after I've worked in product management for 6 years. And founded a company in testing in mobile networks. And then I moved into consultancy to just see where can I apply all those things I learned about how to build products in a rapid way in a complex environment. And so I had the pleasure to work with a lot of different companies on how to craft not only digital strategies, but actually how to execute them. And I learned a fair share of how agile software development works and how you can build custom focused development in organization, and that brought me to Moya in 2017. Because at that point in time, my first son was on its way. I've been heading a unit in the consultancy, and this brought me a lot of travel and general management. And I said, I just don't want to talk about it anymore. I still want to do it once again. And Moya started in the town that I'm living in Hamburg, Germany. And so I had this opportunity to join, being responsible for the product building, what we call ride pooling service, DRT, however you want to phrase it, here in my hometown. And so I've done this as a chief product officer. And in 2022, I was able to follow up on my predecessor, Robert Henrich, who is now the CEO of Hamburger Hochbahn, as a CEO of Moya. And from that, I was able to follow up on a dream that we had since the beginning to ensure that we not only build a great ride pooling technology, but to have autonomous vehicles that we can use. We launched in 2017, we all launched a company with the deep belief that this is going to be necessary. We all saw, as so many in the industry, maybe 2020, 2021, we will have to chance to use the autonomous vehicles here. It turned out it took a little bit longer, but I'm super, super glad that I've been resilient and stayed true to the course. And I've been working on the autonomous mobility program with Volkswagen and in the beginning with Argo AI, later on with Mobileye, to make this dream and this service reality. And that's where we are, that we are ahead of providing commercial services in Europe and also with our partners of the group, Volkswagen, in the US.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, I learned a lot about your career. You know, you're starting as a bass player and then you were a founder as well. So that's very interesting to know. So it's not that you just build a product, but you actually built a company in the past. And now you are leading exciting startup here in Hamburg. And like you mentioned, AV, there is always a prediction that it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. I think it's like, you know, we in childhood, we used to hear a story about a fox. The fox is coming, fox is coming. And now the fox is here. Yeah. And the challenge is how to deal with it. So you mentioned a little bit already about Moya. So Moya offer autonomous electric ride hailing or car pooling or you know, different way we can describe its service in Germany and expanding now even beyond Germany. I'm curious to know a little bit more about Moya. And also, what is your vision for Moya for next 5 to 10 years? Because the world, I mean, from 2017 to 2025, it's like 7 year we progress, but I'm pretty sure the next 7 year even the progress will be much more accelerated and we will see the much more development because of a lot of technological innovation happening. So what's your vision, how you see company in 2032 or 2030?
Yeah, I think the vision starts with the heritage. We are a Volkswagen subsidiary, so we are part of the Volkswagen group and brand. And we have been created and founded to create solutions for urban and later on rural environments. And for us, we spend a lot of time thinking about how cars can be part of that solution instead of being part of the problem. And the idea that we have and that we've made reality is to create a service that is specifically optimized and built from the ground up for what we call ride pooling. I think in the industry it would be called DRT, and operate this on a large scale. And for this, we have created our service here in Hamburg, which runs with 565 purpose-built vehicles. So it's a full battery electric six-seater vehicles. We operate stop-to-stop with more than 14,000 stops here in the city of Hamburg. And since 2019, we were able to welcome 12 million passengers on board of our vehicle despite COVID. And so we have been in the great situation that we learned so much about customer behavior. What do they value? What do they prefer? How do we operate a full electric battery driven fleet in real world operations? How can we automate all this? And this has all been created with the clear understanding that at a certain point in time, we will have autonomous vehicles and we prepared ourselves for exactly this kind of operation. What we've been particularly proud of is that the city of Hamburg and Moya have such a great cooperation that we are now awarded and being considered public transport. And this is kind of a curiosity, I would say, because no one would ever consider that Volkswagen would be officially be called a public transport operator in the city. But that's reality with Moya, and with that, something that I personally really enjoy, because I want to create mobility for the common good, is that we were able to serve more than 400,000 rides last year alone for free for severely handicapped users and provide more than 30,000 rides for people who need a wheelchair service. And this is something that really like pays into the vision of Moya, that we want to build a future of mobility that's safe, autonomous, and particularly driven by cities and their people. And as I said, we're now in a state of conversion, because we don't want to be B2C provider. We've learned also together with being part of UITP that there are so many great entities, authorities, operators in the world that we can work with and provide what we can do best, our technology with the car, with our AD platform that we've built, that you need to run safe and efficient services and enable the operators for the future operations of autonomous vehicles. And that's our turnkey solution that we create together with our partners in the Volkswagen Group. And we test that in Hamburg, Munich, in Austin, Texas. We started testing in Oslo, Norway for winter conditions. And our aim is to create this autonomous ride pooling service to be then used as part of public transport, both in Europe and the US.
That's amazing. I think you mentioned something very interesting, and basically, and it's very impressive. Congratulations. I mean, 12 million rides so far, and especially during pandemic and everything stopped. So I can imagine if the pandemic didn't happen, then probably this ride would have been doubled by now. Yeah. But still, it's very impressive. And like you mentioned, it's very important to understand the customer behavior. And what make Moya a little special is it's considered public transport. It's not considered as a private autonomous vehicle or ride pooling service. And it's actually considered as an integrated part of public transport. And actually, I want to jump to this question, because like many cities see autonomous mobility either as a boon or bane, you know, depending on its use, like you mentioned. It can have a different impact. And it's very interesting that Moya is taking a very different approach compared to the other player in US and China, what we see right now. Like you are from day one, you are integrated with public transport network. Why do you think the city should integrate AV in their network? Because sometimes city feel threatened by the AV technology and they don't want to do it. And similarly, with ride pooling services or ride hailing services, when these services emerged in 2009 and 10, a lot of cities said, no, we should not integrate. And now they are working. And what should we do to make sure autonomous mobility can help city? It's not, it can be complement rather than compete. Like how you think these two angle?
Yeah. First of all, I love technology. My whole life, I've been playing around with technology from my first 56K modem up until all the great tools AI is throwing up on me. And I'm just curious how all this works. And one core belief that I have is that it's not the technology that can be either good or bad simplified. It's the application of the technology in the given circumstances. And on your question, I think it's very important that the industry and regulators, policymakers, that they understand that it's, I would say, uninvitable that this technology will hit the roads. If you like it or if you don't like it, does not play a role. It's like with cellular communication, at a certain point in time, it will be there. And what we understand is that there's a clear customer preference. And what gets people in their cars is reliability, safety, and comfort. And it's as simple as that. And I think if we look on our transit systems, then people will be more likely to use it if they find these three values implemented in the systems. And we know that public transit has struggled in the past due to all the trade-offs that you have to make between politics, funding, efficiency of the system, scarcity of driver. There's a lot of complexity, but autonomous vehicles, if you understand what capabilities are in the technology, it gives you a lot of opportunity to rethink what you're doing. And I think cities should start to embark on this journey to come up with their individual vision on autonomous mobility. And I think there's, again, there's no good application or bad application. I think ride-hailing in the US, it fits the customer's weak demand. And to be honest, it also relieves public transport from a lot of questions on how to provide some kind of shared mobility because it's handled by private companies.
Yeah,
it's a different story. There, robo-taxis can be a great fit and provide a contribution to society because the technology will likely trickle down and can then be used to increase equity and help communities to be better integrated into bigger scheme of things. In Europe, the situation is kind of different. Here we try to bring more people on our network on the great mass transit that we have in a lot of places, but we struggle to have good quality of service in the outskirts, and that's why still a lot of people rely on their cars. And I think if you as a policymaker, regulator, and so on, start to rethink what you do and see the opportunities on how to solve the different challenges that you have with AV technology, you can find the right answers for your city, for your communities to proceed. I think in some cases, there's a bit of a reluctance to earn money. And that's a curiosity that I perceive. It's like, why should public transit systems always be in a deficit? Why not create a situation where you facilitate the willingness to pay of consumers that obviously a lot of them have, because cars are not cheap, parking is not cheap, even a ride-hail vehicle is not cheap. Why would you be reluctant to just charge more than just a standard fare plus maybe a comfort charge and just say, okay, it's another type of commercial service and this can all be like reviewed with AV because we think customers will see it as a completely new opportunity. And that's partially what we have proven with Moya. Moya is run on a commercial model. Our rides are a lot more expensive than public transport, slightly cheaper than a taxi. They have detours and it's fully accepted. Our fleet is more or less fully booked throughout the week. And this has proven this as just such an example, the wise use of dynamic pricing. It can have a great benefit for you to being able to sustain the services and provide services in the outskirts where otherwise you would not have the funding and financial capabilities. So to me, think about how you apply the technology. That's the important thing. Come up with your own vision. There's a lot of toolings, experts that can help you simulate so you don't have to be unprepared and unknowledgeable and then start to set the right, to dig the right channels for the world to come.
I like your approach because instead of having a same approach all cities should follow, every city should have their own vision, AV vision. And you rightly mentioned, you know, like the safety and comfort, these are any customer. The pricing never come upfront. The key factor they always ask is, I want reliable, I want safe, I want comfortable journey. And there is a huge gap between the taxi and public transport. There is a segment which is unserved, and public transport actually can take that opportunity to, like you said, create a new product for people who are willing to pay a little bit more. And this question about why public transport should be in deficit, I mean, we can understand some of the rides will be in deficit because they have a larger purpose to serve. But at the same time, there is an opportunity, you know, exists in the market. I was reading this book, and that book called Gung Ho, and there is a statement in this book. It's not that people don't want to change. It's the comfort of change push people not to change, because there is a lot of discomfort when you change thing. And sometimes that discomfort doesn't allow people to change. So that's I think cities want to do, but it's like they don't know where to start and the challenge. And then also, I think a lot of people feel that autonomous mobility is still far away, whereas I think it's picking up very fast. And already many companies are doing commercial operation. There are local permits are given on public road in US, China, Germany, Israel. So there are already some vehicles are running. And we see the commercial service being operated by Waymo, Cruise, Baidu. I mean, Cruise, some bad thing happened, so they stopped. But still, Waymo and Baidu and Tesla now, you know, launched their robotaxi service. So how can we expect a fully autonomous fleet on the public road? Like, what is your, I would say, prediction? Because everybody makes a prediction every 2 years, it's coming next. But what is your prediction? When can we see the fully autonomous fleet on the road, and how do you see Moya playing an important role during that time when there is a mass adoption of AV on the public road?
I think for the US market, it's pretty clear it's there. So I would say the industry led by Waymo, they're doing a great job. Others are closely following on the timeline. We have reached base camp. So what do I mean by Basecamp? We have proven that the technology is there. The business case just is not yet there. It's too costly to operate the vehicles. One huge factor is the ratio of operators per vehicle. It's the cost of integration. It's the robustness of the vehicle. So there's a lot of different ingredients. Now, right now, as a product guy, I would say we see a great MVP. It serves its purpose. It's there. It just lacks the unit economics and some tweaking here and there. And I think that's really the question for the US market. When will it become mass marketable, adoptable? And I think that will come with the next generation of vehicles. Whoever is going to produce that vehicles, a lot of the learnings will be incorporated. A lot of technology will unlock new functionality that drives down the cost of remote operations and remote safety procedures. And I think that creates a huge benefit. I think this is not going to be, there's not the one day anymore where it will all happen. I think it's going to be a gradual change now from an MVP into a commercialized business that is actually able to be sustainable for the whole industry. On the European landscape, the German and a lot of European regulators, they have created a higher set of requirements that requests you as a vehicle manufacturer or AV company to build a vehicle made for these requirements. And this is things like redundant brake system, redundant steering. You need to have a remote control center that adheres to certain standards specifically defined. So there's a lot of complexity in the engineering process, and you actually need an OEM, so a car manufacturer, to certify this vehicle as a whole, including the SDS system, including the ecosystem. And the task of validation verification becomes a lot harder. And the question of who takes the liability is a different beast than the self-certification process in the US. And so the timeline in the EU, it's slightly delayed due to that fact and due to these entrance barriers in most of the member countries. And here, I think we are the front runner with our vehicle project that we have designed our our vehicle according to the requirements, and we have the procedures and the standards in place how to homologate and verify these vehicles, and we target for commercial operation in Hamburg by 2027.
Yeah, no, so 2027, that's
clear answer, it's in 2 years.
No, I wish you good luck. I mean, like you mentioned, there are a lot of complexity around it, and I was not aware that the car company need to kind of certify the whole ecosystem, not only the vehicle, but also the ecosystem and redundant brake, redundant steering, and then remote monitoring. It's a lot. So I'm curious now, like you mentioned, clearly in US, the approach is very different. China, we know the approach is very different, and Europe is taking a very different approach. What are the regulatory framework for AV in Europe, which you feel is, you know, a bit challenging or which probably need a little bit of review, and what Europe need to do to accelerate the deployment of AV? Because like you said, Europe has very good public transportation system. It just need to connect the last mile and first mile and connect the suburb. So I think it's a perfect case to deploy AV. Like, what is we are missing in Europe?
I would not specifically say Europe is missing something. Europe has just a different approach of regulate first. And to be honest, I, being responsible for the commercialization of this business, I do actually like that, because it gives me some sort of investment security. I know that if I am able to prove that we adhere to the standards defined, as an example, in the German law for autonomous driving and the ordinance for autonomous driving, we will be able to start, and no one can stop us. And it also gives me some sort of liability shielding for me personally, for the whole team, that we can say, okay, let's look on this. This is all the precautions that we have taken. We verified this. This is all redundant. This is built according to the UNEC standards. We applied SOTIF. We applied ASPICE. So there's a lot of different industry standards that give me a lot more security that I know, okay, if I follow the rules, then I can immediately jump into commercialization. For sure, this ignores totally driving performance. This ignores the driving comfort of an SDS system. It can be a completely different story. But in our approach, that's something where we see that there are a lot of players coming up in the market. I think Mobileye leading the pack, but there's more like Wave, May Mobility, Pony AI, a lot of players in the market who specifically aim for not being the total vertical integrated company like Waymo, Zoox, Tesla, but they are looking for partners to work in the local environments that can provide vehicle, that can provide the ADMAS ecosystem, that have access to operators. And that's exactly the spot that we aim for with our business model. So I think Europe has a different approach. It's not a notoriously bad approach. It's not as, I would say, innovation friendly as in the US. That's also the reason why I think there's a limited amount of SDS companies who have prevailed with the driving task up until today. But, you know, technology will evolve. It will be more commoditized with AI. We will see end-to-end AI systems that are capable, and they will leapfrog some of the developments we have seen in the last 10 years. And then it's more about building a whole system that is safe and ready for operations.
No, I agree with you. It's more like regulate first, but it also give you heads up, because then you don't need to tackle those issues later. You already solved those complex problem. The only, like you mentioned, sometimes it make it much more difficult for innovators, because you need to start, start dealing with this complex problem at the same time you're building a product. So you need to take both these regulatory issues as well as product issue together. Now, one of the technology issue a lot of companies are discussing is LiDAR versus vision-based sensing approach. I mean, being Moya, like you mentioned, you have a sweet spot in managing the vehicle, understanding the vehicle technology and all. And some company we saw, like Tesla, is betting more on vehicle camera, whereas Waymo is more betting on the sensor LiDAR and all. And I don't know if you saw the conversation between the Uber CEO and Elon Musk, where Uber CEO said that camera-only self-driving is very difficult. And Elon Musk came back and said, like, he actually turned off radar in Tesla because there was a conflict, like who will get the priority? If the camera sees something and radar sees something, who get more priority? So he said, no, camera will be the one which will win end of the game. So as someone who work in this area and who's, I would say, one of the expert, which technology you are more bullish and why, and how you think AI can help to change this whole thing? Because 2 years back or 3 years back, AI was not that omnipresent, but now AI is there, everything. Like I open my Home Depot app and I see view review by AI. It's like now you see AI everywhere. So how you see AI will also help to play?
Yeah, I think that's an all-time classic discussion of the industry. What is our stance on that? First of all, as an integrator of the technology, for us, one of the biggest risks is to take unnecessary risks. And like you mentioned, the unfamous example of Cruise and what happened to them, it was not due to the technology, don't get me wrong here, but it has clearly shown one sign in the industry. No matter how much you have spent before, no matter what your track record is, it's one critical single incident that can take down not only the company, but I would say can take down and throw back the industry by years. So not taking risks that you can avoid, for us, it's a prime directive. If we see on the technologies available, for sure, most systems heavily rely on the perception driven by camera systems. And this can get you a long way. And as you said, with end-to-end AI, you can see stellar driving performance without even having a base map below, driving to cities just by the behavioral learning that is happening with end-to-end AI. That then comes in the complexity, and that's what's for us a level of consideration. We have made experiences testing in winter condition, and it's just one example is to have a white pile of snow in front of a white pile of snow. It does not give you any sort of depth information. And it does not give you any information whether behind this pile of snow, is there a car, is there nothing, or is there a rock? And having driven our vehicles in Oslo, I was very happy that the vehicle was able to detect whether it can, in an emergency situation, partially drive on that pile of snow or it can't. And this is one example where cameras can be misleading. They can be misled. So it's one vector of manipulation that you can avoid. And if there's no light, cameras don't work. Yeah. So good luck in a dark tunnel. Yeah. Good luck in a garage. And so we think that at least one having one sensor capability that is not dependent on light or emits lights on its own will be keen. We think right now the combination of camera, LiDAR, and radar is the best you can get. We see technology evolving and radars getting better and not only providing you with a one-point information of an object and how fast it moves, but provide you with a point cloud. And those kind of 3D imaging radars, they can likely be a replacement of LiDARs. And I think sensor technology will ever more evolve. Then it's a game of economics and how you compute and how you do the sensor fusion in the backend. But for us, it's quite clear. I would not bet my life on just a single non-redundant system, to be frank.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love your point about not taking risks which you can avoid. So it's better not to take risks. And you rightly mentioned about Cruise, you know, it was one of the incident which actually led to the whole collapse. And it's not that was bad because you've driven millions of miles and one particular mile, something happened, the whole thing blame for that one particular mile. And some of the edge cases you mentioned, now it forced me to rethink, like the dark night, you know, when there is no light, let's say you are in suburban area, there is no street light and something happened and then you have nothing to see. And snow, I can imagine in Canada, we have a lot of snow and sometimes you don't know what is behind the snow. It can be human, it can be car, it can be more snow. So that's another. And when we have a big snowfall, that's the case. You see snow piles everywhere. And sometimes as a human, it's very difficult for us to drive because we don't know what's coming in that back because you don't have that visibility. So LiDAR and radar can really help. No, good to hear that. I mean, it's like you said, it's a classic debate. There is no one answer. It's you need to find a solution for these edge cases. So thanks for sharing that. I mean, I really, really find it's useful. Now, a lot of experts say that the future of mobility is CASE, you know, which is like connected, autonomous, shared, electric. And Moya is actually doing all of these cases now. Like these are connected vehicle, these are autonomous, these are shared, and these are electric. And I think there will be a big wave of change in next 4-5 years. What happened with on-demand mobility in 2010? When the zone mobile on-demand mobility or the smartphone came. With the smartphone, there were a lot of other things became possible. How do you see the integration between ride pooling and autonomy fitting together for future of public transport in Europe and globe? You already mentioned about some cases in US and Europe, but what do you see overall in other markets like in Asia or other countries? How do you see AV and ride-hailing will definitely work together?
For me, it's just a consequential next step for the whole ride-hailing industry. And our market understanding is that the adoption will first be driven in markets that are challenged by demographic change. So if there's a scarcity of driver, if there's a cost pressure due to the scarcity of driver, then this will likely create better business cases and also be more relevant for public players to early on adopt autonomous mobility into their existing frameworks. What we see is that the technology will first be applied in smaller body form vehicles, so be it cars, be it vans like our ID Buzz, or be it smaller 6 to 10 seaters. And that's for a reason, because the it's easier to maneuver, and the coverage of the whole vehicle, how to create a 360-degree coverage of the sensor is easier to create. And something that we realized is that if you want to bring in a self-driving system into a city bus, then even latency from the end of a standard bus to the compute system can be a huge issue. And then, to be honest, it's not a huge business case. The technology itself is very costly. The amount of buses bought worldwide is rather small, and the economic benefit for the operators of bus lines is just smaller, because with one driver you can transport up to 50, 60, 70 people if there's good efficiency in the service. So that's why we see that the majority of the vehicles available in the next 5 years will rather be, from a public transit point of view, be small-sized vehicle. And this brings you to the opportunity to use them, as you said, for first last mile, but also for connecting suburban areas into the city centers, also provide point-to-point mobility for people who have the specific need. And if the city is open to that, even earn money to that, and kind of replacing taxi services, because we see that taxi also has dramatic economic problems to the scarcity of drivers. And I think that's the three main angles that we see. Later on, for sure, replacing underutilized bus lines by more flexible transportation schemes during night times in the outskirts, that can be a huge supportive case in a city, as you can directly save a lot of money for not operating a bus line that is utilized with 3 to 5 people an hour. It gives more flexibility and it's better for the consumer, so that's a great win-win. Later on, I think we will see that the vehicles will be able to drive more into the countryside. And then I think there's a huge opportunity to connect communities that currently are lacking proper public transit options, to connect them to suburban centers and get them into the mass transit, and just also provide better mobility for elder people and people with special needs.
No, I think you rightly mentioned, like, right now a lot of countries are facing issue with the cost, the driver shortage, and the operation. So this can be good solution for them to start. The cost is a main prohibitive. Recently, during the LA unrest, they burned some vehicle and somehow somebody able to estimate the price of each Waymo. And they estimated around $1 million for each Waymo car, which is like it cost $1 million. I don't know if that's correct or not, but somebody kind of estimated. And I think the point you mentioned about the night service and all, like in Seoul, actually, they are doing pilot of a commercial autonomous buses in the night service because it's difficult to find drivers and you need to pay much more higher. And the passenger load is not that high, like you mentioned, 4 or 5 people. So how can you serve those time or services with autonomous vehicles? So we will see. And then also, there is less traffic. So the roads are much safer compared to daytime when there is a lot of traffic. So we'll see these changes. No, that's a good point. And actually, you mentioned something important about the driver shortage. But it's also, I feel with the technology, a lot of jobs will change. And AI is already a buzzword. And I was reading an article published by Financial Times in 2017, which say that plan for 5 careers in a lifetime. So it means you cannot rely on one career. And a lot of people are predicting that the AI, a lot of jobs will go away, especially the drivers, you know, the taxi driver and ride pooling driver, you don't need them anymore. And other people say, no, it's not going to have big impact. You know, you need human with technology. Which side you are, and do you think AI will bring radical change in our society, especially like you mentioned with mobility? You can actually connect the suburb. You can connect mobility for elders with the demographic change. We'll have more older population. We can actually provide service to people who didn't have those services. So probably people will travel more, much more. You know, I'm sitting in my car in the night doing intercity, sleeping. And instead of taking the plane, I'm just using my nighttime and going to the city. How are you seeing the society will change in future?
If we look on the long run, then I think AI and automation, physical AI, embodied AI, however you want to call it, it will have a tremendous impact on the landscape of jobs. If you compare that, I think the closest I can remember is the examples of farmers who had a lot of people like working on the farms day in, day out, preparing the soil and so on. And then suddenly the tractors came and people moved into factories. They moved into the dealership and workshops to maintain the tractors. So it's I think we are on the brink of again leap in the after industrialization, servicization. I think now it's going to be a next leap in the economic landscape that we will see with the rise of AI. I think the time frame is vastly overestimated and hyped. Mm. I think, yes, there's AI can provide a lot of beneficial information. It can relieve you of a lot of task. It can relieve you a lot of work in your business that does not utilize the full mental capacity and creativity of people. And therefore, I think the current rise of LLMs can be a huge push towards that. Mm. I love that companies again start to consider how they can use data, how they can make sense out of that, because I think there's a lot of potential for the ecologic benefit of this planet if we use what is known, and ultimately I think it will be a conversion in society, but it will not happen overnight. I think we look into 15-20 years of conversion, specifically when we talk about all things physical, because if the story of it comes in 2 years of autonomous vehicles has taught us one thing. As soon as you are in a real world environment, it's a different beast and it's not a hyperscaling business like in the internet. It will require time. It will require acceptance. It will require people with strong beliefs, and it will require the support from the society to happen. And I think it's different perspectives. If you look on how China is dealing with that, I think it's very impressive on how convinced and how long-term perspective and with how strong support for businesses they already consider today how the society of the future can look like. And I think there's a lot to learn for all so-called Western countries.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly mentioned. It's very impressive to see in China now they already introduce AI to kids in the school. And I'm trying to do the same with my kids. Like I asked them to use ChatGPT a little bit more. Yesterday he was conversing with ChatGPT, asking even sometimes stupid question. But at least he's learning how to do it and using those things. I don't know if he need to learn typing or not anymore because now it is much more conversational. But I find it very interesting. And I'm curious, like you said, it will take 15 to 20 years. So it's good for our career. We are still have 20 years. So we are kind of safe in that sense. How do you see it will change, like the life will change for the future generation for technology? Because you said you love technology. So what are you telling your kid? What should they learn to be ready for the next change?
That's a good thing. I think if my kids would ask me today, I would say learn either something creative and physical. Like if you're the best carpenter, I think this still will have a value in the years to come. It's like with traditional handmade watches. Yes, it will be a niche market. It will not be super world dominating market, but I think humans have shown that such niches, they are great and they will prevail. I think that's a safe bet if you might not want to change career every 5 years. And the other thing is, I think emotional intelligence and creativity, that's going to be a stellar skill for the future. I think in the past, problem solving has been super important, but with the reasoning of AI, that might be less of a skill. So I think connecting the dots, bringing the people together and creating coalition and motivation and creativity on how to solve problems, aside from just pure creation of options, that can be a great thing to do.
Very interesting. I mean, this is the question I keep asking myself, in like, what should I push them? Should they learn coding? Should they learn something else? And like you said, the problem solving is going to be not that important. It will be more like how creative you are, how can you bring people together, what can you do.
And definitely not coding. Definitely not, because we see that like tasks that developers have like taken 4 hours or more to do, now with agentic AI can create it in 4 minutes. So their job changes more into validating and verifying whether this is actually what they wanted. And we're not yet there, but I think coding
will be
less important than discovery and creation.
I think it's a hard change. It's a hard change for the society. Like you, I really love your example about farmer and human labor. And then from actually working in the farm, they actually shift to the factory and the service center and the sales center. So it's not they became redundant, but their profile completely changed. Instead of sowing the seed, now they are learning how to replace the tire and put the engine back and all those kind of stuff. Something you mentioned very interesting about the acceptability of this change. I personally use autonomous vehicle in San Francisco. I took a vehicle drive in Beijing, Guangzhou, in Seoul. I mean, I tried like different country and also in Germany, I saw. And I would say I was curious for 10, 15 minutes. And after that, it became like business as usual. You don't care what's going on because you feel like, okay, it's normal. But there are many people still not comfortable with autonomous vehicle. I don't know, in Hamburg also, you must be discussing with people or you are getting some feedback for people. How do you think the mass adoption of self-driving vehicle will happen or we will never happen? You know, like we can never have a cashless society. Still, people love to have cash because of different reasons. So do you think we will have a fully self-driving vehicle societies or it will be like a hybrid?
I think it will be hybrid for a long time. People just love to drive. And that's fair. For the acceptance of the autonomous vehicle, I think the application is really key. So who do you market the service for? Is it serving the common good, or is it serving just a minority at a premium price? And I think that that's something that, with my background in mobile communication, that you can learn from this case, is that in the beginning, cellular communication was a luxurious good. You had to pay 30,000 euros, dollars, whatever in that time, for a phone that did fit in your trunk, and it was like a status symbol for the rich. And I think that's exactly where the technology is. It's not there for full production. It's not there for every household. It's still too expensive to be able to serve the common good. So that's where we just are in the industry. But now it's important to really leap forward and create services that, even with public funding, they educate people that it's not a technology that is made to clog your streets and just make people go faster to their country houses by going through your backyard, but it's a service that can serve you and your family in all situation. And there are the cases, like if you have some sort of disability, and as you might remember from UITP, I just had the unfortunate mishap that I was limited in my mobility, and I was reliant on taxi services and Moya to come from A to B because I was not able to climb any stairs. And if we as an industry, as policymakers, if we make sure that the AVs are applied in such a manner that they help you in these kind of situation, then the public acceptance will come a lot sooner than if we wait for it to trickle down the path of commercialization that private companies would go.
Now that's I fully agree with that, and I can also see our demographic change, the aging parents, the old people, they cannot drive. And the young population, they cannot drive, so it can be perfect fit for them, sending those vehicle. Now I think Waymo just launched a service in San Francisco where the kids can take the ride, the parents can book a ride for their kids, young kids going to classes and doing some activity, and they feel more safer because the vehicle will go and they can see the feed and they can see everything in the vehicle. So I fully agree, you need to create those cases and make people comfortable with it rather than just leaving it to some private company to do it. So the city need to come forward and do it.
Yeah, just like to add on, the majority of our users of our Moya service are female.
Oh, female. And why, that, do you think?
To the safety, because you don't have to stand in a crowded bus stop in the middle of the night, because it's a smaller form factor, because they are a little bit detached from the drivers that we have. And we would love to offer a woman for women service today, but unfortunately we don't find sufficient female driving staff to make this happen. But we know once we have autonomous vehicles, like, this is going to be a game-changing moment for all women who want to travel at night. Yeah, and that's exactly how you said it, with children, with women, anyone who needs special has special requirements on safety. This is going to be huge, and if we really market that and if we create those applications together, then it's going to be a blast.
Yeah, no, that's interesting, because I saw many countries, they launch like a special women service, being taxis, being ride-hailing services, but I didn't see any successful case. And like you mentioned, there are not enough women drivers. So even though you have enough women riders, there are not enough women driver to drive those vehicles. So you always face the challenge. Now, I want to switch gear and want to discuss a little bit about your leadership philosophy. Like you mentioned, you being a founder in the past and wear many hat in the past. I thought you're not a founder, but you are a founder. And you corrected me that you founded a company, and now you are currently leading a startup. So what is your leadership style? And now, how do you keep the startup spirit alive at Moya? Because like you said, you're a part of a Volkswagen group. Volkswagen is such a big group. It's come with a lot of advantage, but it's also come with a lot of legacy. how do you make sure that Moya still remain as a company which has a startup spirit?
Yeah, I think one important aspect of my leadership style and management style is being obsessed with the customer experience that we create. And I think you've witnessed a little bit of how I explain and look on things. That's one of the intentions I have, is to create great products for the customers. And this comes from a lesson I learned with exactly founding the first company. We've used great technology to solve a problem that at the point in time when we hit market in 2008 was no one willing to pay for. It was solely about quality. And at this point in time, we failed to pivot towards something that helps to lower cost, because that was the only thing that was relevant in the mobile industry at that point in time. And so I learned that it's important to listen to your customer, not just once, but keep an eye on what is happening, talk to everyone that you want to collaborate with, and be keen that you're able to make the best integration of what people want and what you with the technology are able to provide. I think what for me is super important is the encouragement of experimentation. So I rather start getting stuff done, experiment it, make quick decisions and move on, than to make a long, long, long plan that never comes to reality. So for me, really trying things out is super important. And with Moya, we've done so many crazy things that didn't work out, but it's a good thing, because you know it's not worth the effort. Yeah, it's just not the right situation, or we've not had the best idea. And I think that's more important than to talk all about what could have happened if we would have done it. And then if it comes to people, I would say, if you ask my team, one of the aspects I have is being authentic and have candid transparency. So you would be surprised on the level of detail information that I share with the team, and I'm not a sugarcoating guy. So it's like, if there's anything wrong, if it takes longer, if we have to pivot, if we have taken a wrong decision, then I say that, because I think we are all grown-ups, and it's super important that people can take their individual decisions on whether they want to stay and they are motivated and they embark on their journey, or whether they say, no, it's like, it's not the company that I want to work for, because it's a different thing now. And so this is super important to me, to create this transparency on what is happening. I think you can't over communicate. So I would say my main job is like being chief repetition officer.
That's what I see all the leaders. They have to keep repeating the same message again and again. And in fact, I tell my team also, is like, we are like a soccer team. It doesn't matter what you did in the past. It matters what you're doing now. If you perform well, you stay. If you don't perform well, you know, you will be called as a legend, but not as a current player. And that's where you need to keep your game up all the time. So I like what you said. There's like, everybody's grown up, so not sugarcoating and telling what's right. Now, there are very few startups which, like, we see most of the startup from US going out and become international and expanding in Europe and all. But there are not many big startups which have moved from Europe, like Spotify is one example, Skype and all. There are some good examples, I will not say, but very few examples of European startup going out. And it's also because of the leadership style, you know, like the leadership style in Europe and US is very different. I think Moya is also interesting case, because you recently partnered with Uber and you're going to launch service in US. You already mentioned about Austin, that they are doing something there. Can you share one about this collaboration and what is the future plan for Moya? How you think a European company going forward and expanding in US?
Yeah, you often use the term startup, so it's a bit of a mixed feeling for me here, because on the one side we feel ourselves as a little outgrown startup. On the other side, we are part of one of the biggest car manufacturers in the world with the Volkswagen Group, and this is exactly our mental relation to what we are doing. on the one side, we know we need to prove what we are doing in our local market in Hamburg. But at the same time, the opportunity for the Volkswagen Group in the autonomous space is also there in the US. And as I said, I think answers are different. Technology is, to a certain degree, it's the same. It can be adopted to the local requirements and adjusted. And that's exactly what we do within the Volkswagen Group. And Moya is growing, and it's growing in its footprint. And that's why we have a company within Volkswagen Group with ADMT LLC in the US market that is currently helping us to bring our technology into the local market as their business. And for this, there is the partnership with Moya, where Moya with Uber, where Moya is providing the solution for the ID Buzz AD to integrate within the Uber platform. And for that, the colleagues in the US together with Uber have decided for the Los Angeles market for the first place of deployment. Okay. It's a huge opportunity. It's the second largest ride-hail market in the US. So I think it's an obvious choice. Decent weather conditions. Yeah. So very favorable conditions. And we are working together with our partners in the US to deploy the vehicles by 2026 and then pick up operation by 2027.
Yeah, and there are two major events happening in Los Angeles, the FIFA next year, six games, and then we have Olympics 2028. So I think Moya will play an important role in 2028 when the Olympics will be happening in the city. And why I call Moya as a startup, you know, like you said, you love technology. For me, I love innovation. So any company which is innovative or doing something interesting, I feel they are still startup. I don't want, like for me, Shopify, Uber, they are still like a startup because they are building something creative and unique. Even though, like you mentioned, it's outgrown, it's now completing 12 million rides and all. So I don't put you as a small startup, but it's an innovative company. So I I want to use that word.
Yeah. For
Now, this is my last question. Is autonomous mobility is here. You all, like, you must have tried vehicle in different part of the world. I have seen this. So for me, technology is there. Like you mentioned, it's only the application and the commercial model and the business model need to be worked out. Why? What is the most important piece of advice would you give to the city leader thinking about adopting the large-scale AV services or those who are not even doing that right now? What is the biggest advice you will give it to these people?
Yeah, I think first, collaboration is essential to shaping the future of mobility. So you should be wise on choosing the players that you work with. Do they provide you with the interfaces, with the data, with the degree of control that you need and that you deserve? I think the second aspect is don't wait for AVs to miraculously come to your city and be able to be tendered. I think you need to create a vision. You need also to think about how you're going to fund the implementation of the AVs, what is the long-term game, and have a strategy and a clear idea on how to get things going so you don't have to start from the scratch and reinvent the wheel. And I think that's also important in the transit industry. There's a little tendency to overburden new technology with so many industry-specific requirements that at the end of the day, you can't get going because a nitty little gritty detail is not solved or the handle does not have the right color. And I think there we need an openness to say, okay, it's not where we are. It's not where we want it to be, but it's where we are. And let's work towards the ultimate goal, but accept that, as I said in the beginning, the cellular phone does not fit in your pocket. It might fit in the trunk of your car, so but still get going, because that's what we need to have clear signals from the public transit industry that there's interest and that the adoption is wanted and they drive it.
Now, these are very important point, and I love what you said, like each agency should have like a AV team within their company, even though if they're not doing it, but they need to start learning and they should not keep waiting it to appear one day in their city, because once it will appear, it will be very difficult to stop and integrate. They should be in a driver's seat, and they can actually start collaborating much before, you know, now start discussing and rethinking about what are the underutilized route I can use and provide some kind of a service which is more suitable and cheaper, rather than having a, you know, full fleet fixed line service, which is not profitable. No, thank you, Shasha. I mean, all these are really great point. And it's great to see when I was in Hamburg, how Moya is working with City of Hamburg. So you are fully integrated. And also now how you're taking the company out and expanding internationally. US will be an interesting place, because like you said, the European public transport is very established, and US, we have a different approach, but LA will be a good market. So I'm looking forward and wish you good luck with that. Generally, we end this podcast to ask some rapid fire personal question round. And the idea is to learn a little bit more about you and to know more about you as a person. So once you're ready, I'll fire my this question to you.
Mm-hmm. I'm ready.
Okay. So now you already, like you mentioned a little bit about the first question. So if you're not in a transit technology, or I would say the base player space, what other profession you would have selected? Well, I know if I ask you transit technology, you would have said I would be a base player, but I've said not a base player. Like, what other profession you would have selected?
I would say a sailing instructor. Because I love instructor. Sailing, yes.
No, I love that. So as a leader, you want people to move into the right direction. So that's what you're doing right now. Sailing the company.
Uncertain environmental conditions.
With the high tide, low tide and other thing. Now, I know you may be biased because Hamburg is a beautiful city, but which is your favorite city in the world and why?
It's like my preferences are sailing, cycling, and food. And so I would say it's Copenhagen, Vancouver, and Osaka.
Vancouver is a great choice. And unique answer, Copenhagen and Osaka. Yeah, all these are beautiful places. Any favorite book or movie you recommend?
One book that sticks with me is In the Beauty of the Lilies by John Updike, because it tells a great story of decades of families and how single decisions and beliefs can change the faith of future generation. And that's how I see what we do in the autonomous mobility. It's about the decisions that we take today that will define how my kids travel.
That's interesting. It will be my to read list in The Beauty of Lily. I agree. Like, when you change one piece, it can have like a snowball effect and can create a huge shift generation later. Now, what one thing do you wish you should have learned early in life?
I would say don't wait for the future. Do it today. So a bit like carpe diem, but that's what I learned both in private life, in business. Just go for it, yeah, and don't wait for something that might be better around the next corner. Just use the opportunities that you have and make the best out of it.
Just build it today. Don't wait for perfection. Yeah. Perfection is enemy of the getting thing done. Now, this is my last question. If you can change one thing in life, what would it be?
Invent fusion power. Because I think having a real sustainable source of power all over the world will create so much peace and solve a lot of problems. It will create new ones for sure, but that's how humans are. But I think from my perspective, it could be great for everyone.
Yeah, I agree. And power is the next, oil, I would say even more important than oil. So if the power will play, everything around our life is run by power, you know, our vehicle, our life, our fridge, our stove, our house, everything is with power, and probably the world will be much more peaceful space with fusion power. Great. Thank you so much, Sasha. I mean, really enjoyed this conversation. A lot of learning. Thank you for sharing all these feedback. The biggest takeaway is don't teach coding to my kids, you know, teach them something else. But I think all these conversations I really enjoyed, and I really feel that all the listeners will really find it and see these interesting perspectives you shared about autonomous vehicle, about the mobility, as well as about the life. Thank you for sharing that.
Thanks, Rispal. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. If you like this episode, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating, as it will help us to spread our word. If you have any feedback or suggestion for this podcast, please feel free to reach out to us at info@mobility-innovator.com. I look forward to see you next time. Thank you.